Hi, everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Hi, Annika. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here because even though college seems a really far time away in my personal life because my oldest is just 10, all my friends that have older kids are really stressed out about the whole situation. University is just insanely expensive. So I want to talk to you all about your job as a career counselor at St. George's. But before I get into that, I just want to hear your Luxembourgish story. So tell me about you.
Okay, so I've been here 17 and a half years, so a very long time now. Came here with my husband. We were both in London. I was working as a lawyer in banking mergers and acquisitions in a city law firm in London, working all hours. My husband was also working as a banker in London. And we both didn't grow up in the UK, so we were both quite keen to leave the UK. So when we got married, Luxembourg is where we came, following my husband's job.
Is he in finance?
Yes, he works for the European Union.
But he is British.
Yes, so he's British, but born and grew up in Belgium. And I'm half British, half Dutch, but I grew up all over the world, really.
Sounds like a very Luxembourgish story. Okay, yeah. So you felt right at home here, and it's been 17 and a half years?
17 and a half years, can't believe it. The longest I've ever lived anywhere in my life. So before that, the longest was London, which was about 8 years.
And are you definitely lifers here?
Yes, for now we are, definitely. We really like it here. We've got two kids very settled into school and life here, and it's a pretty good place to live.
When you came here, was it like for a three-year stint?
No, we came thinking we'll just live here as long as we're happy here. So we moved here. I got a job here at NAMSA to begin with. And then when we had our children, I stopped working and took a break for quite a while, about 5 years. I stopped working to look after my children when they were small, which was really amazing. I was really glad that I had the opportunity. And then when my youngest was about two, I started thinking they're going to start going to school a bit more. What am I going to do? I knew I didn't want to go back to being a lawyer. I didn't really enjoy it. So I started thinking, what can I do? I actually bumped into a lady who had moved to Luxembourg from Sweden. And she, in Sweden, she had a website which was helping expats settle into Stockholm and Sweden. She wanted to set it up in Luxembourg. So she asked me if I wanted to help her set up this website. I said yes, because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. We set that up. It's now still running under City Savvy Luxembourg.
Oh, yeah.
So that was actually the first thing I did that was quite different. And it inspired me or gave me the courage to try something completely different because I thought I'm not too old to try something new.
City Savvy Luxembourg, how long had you been here when you felt like you were qualified to tell people about settling in here?
I had been here, gosh, when City Savvy started, been here about 6-7 years. It started off as a website really about what's on in Luxembourg in English, because at that time there was hardly anything. So we just did it as kind of two mums, just helping other mums or expats settle into Luxembourg in English, if you're having children, schools. And then that it started doing really well. But then my friend moved back to Sweden. I didn't want to carry it on my own. And that's when Amanda took it over and she's really changed it. It's now more of like a women in business website. But it started as just a sort of home project to help English speakers in Luxembourg.
That's so cool. Yeah. I think it's a print magazine too.
Yeah, it's a print magazine. They have offices.
I studied that thing before I came here. Okay. So yeah, if anybody's thinking about moving here, this is a really good resource.
Also, that's one of the things about Luxembourg. It's so easy to network and you're free to give it a go, try what you want to do. There's a small English speaking community. So once you're plugged in, it's very easy to network actually.
And why didn't you want to carry it on by yourself?
I realized it's not really what I wanted to do. It was sort of more of a hobby and it was getting to the stage where it needed to be a business. And Amanda had amazing ideas and she was one of our writers and helped with it. And then it made me think, what do I want to do? And actually, I can do something totally new and be successful. It gave me the confidence to go back to university and do what I really wanted to do, which I've always wanted to do, careers advising. I just really like helping people. Problem solving. I love hearing people's stories, their career journey, which for me is not just jobs, their whole life. Even the question, how did you end up in Luxembourg? You just get so many different answers. So I like advising people. It's just something, it kind of suits my skill set. And actually, a lot of the skills are similar to being a lawyer, problem solving, research, helping people, listening, finding solutions, planning for the future. I'm quite future orientated. It's just something I feel I'm naturally good at and I really love it. In Luxembourg, I've decided to focus on teenagers, which is a great age group because they're so positive. They don't really know what to do, so you can really make a difference, or they have just amazing ideas and are really inspiring. Whilst adults can be a little bit harder to work with, not so open to change.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. So you have a degree in college?
Not college counseling, but it's career development and coaching. So I have a master's in that. So I'm not a university admissions expert. It's career development. So those skills, even adults need, everyone needs to develop your career. And to me, the career is not just your job title. It's learning. It could be hobbies. It could be the roles you have in your life. So even like myself, take a career break as a mother or a carer. So what I do is help people plan their life journey, more understanding themselves, so their own skills, their strengths, what they're good at, and how to make decisions. And then at St. George's, working with teenagers is primarily helping students understand themselves and then how to make decisions and how to plan for the future.
What do you tell students and parents about going on this journey? What are some tips?
At St. George's, we have a career personal development program from year seven, which students are typically age 11. We're starting to sow the seeds about how to think about themselves. In the Luxembourgish system, it's the last year of primary. And in the British system, it's the first year of secondary. So age 11 to 12. What we're doing with that age is helping them to understand themselves. So what are they good at? What do they like doing? And also helping them to understand that they're going to change. We always think we're not going to change. We look back and we think, gosh, I've changed so much, but we don't expect ourselves to change looking forward, but we do. We're helping them understand by the time they're 18, they might have really changed, but to be open to that. So it's all about being open, exploring possibilities, definitely not narrowing it down. We don't want any students to be trying to really narrow down what they want to do, but to actually understand how to explore possibilities, opportunities, how to talk to people, how to understand themselves, what they're good at, what they enjoy. And then as they get older, that translates into more decisions.
Do you ask them to write down things that they're interested in? Do they take an aptitude test? And then how do you specifically alert them that they might change?
I'm not massively keen on things like five-year plans and getting them to write down where they think they're going to be in 5 years, because my whole thing is the world is changing so quickly. Children have to be extremely adaptable and resilient. So it's more getting them to understand how important it is and how good it is to be flexible and to change your mind. They have 1 hour a week as personal development in the curriculum. And then in sixth form, which is the last 2 years of school, they have 2 hours a week.
In the beginning, it's about keeping your options open and thinking about what you like, what you dislike, whatever. Yeah. When does it start to get a little bit more serious about these are the grades that you need? This is how much it's going to cost, that kind of stuff.
In St. George's, they follow the British curriculum, which means at age 15, 16, they do exams called GCSEs. 2 years before that, they have to choose their subjects. So that's the first time a student has to make a decision that it's not a life-changing decision, but it's actually a really great opportunity for students to learn how to make a decision that's their choice, which subjects they're going to do.
So a parent, how do you support this?
I love working with parents. I think they're great. And actually, parents are still the biggest influence on students' career progressions and journeys. I do have top tips for parents. And number one is to really help your child learn how to research and do things themselves. So I think now in this day and age, so many teenagers with social media, they get pushed information. What we're seeing in students is they don't know how to research things themselves. They just wait for information to come to them. So number one as parents is, yes, your child comes to you and says, oh, I'm thinking of this or thinking of that. And even when students come to me, I won't just give them information straight away. First question I'll ask is, what have you found out about this? How have you found out about it? How are you researching to see what they know and how they're finding information? And then support them to find the information rather than just give the answers. Because once they've left school and home, they need to be able to research and develop their own careers. Number one is listen to your child and just observe them. Like, what do they love doing? What, when they're reading or what are they watching on social media? What kind of things interest them?
Is it really naive of me that I hope my kids are not going to be on social media when they're in their early teens?
It could go either way at the moment. Either we're just going to have to accept it, or schools are trying to control it a bit more. Maybe our teenagers are going to be, the next generation might be more sensible. I don't know. At the moment, I think we have to work with it.
As a parent, you're supposed to sort of observe what your kids are watching.
It's more like, what are they interested in? What are they when they're doing their homework, even which subjects at school do they really enjoy doing? What are they, when they're doing something, they get lost and they lose track of time? What are they just naturally enjoying doing? And just, and then generate conversations around that. So some parents might say, oh, all my child wants to do is play video games. They've just said they want to be a, do video games when they're older. And they're like, absolutely not. So rather than sort of shutting down a conversation, or if they say, I want to be a social media influencer, we might all inside be thinking, well, that's not a real job. But actually, rather than shutting down that conversation, I'm always about generating ideas and exploring. So ask them, what do you like about the video game? Which bits interest you? Who do you think's involved in creating a video game? So you've got like the video game as the core interest, but you're generating ideas. And that can be around job titles. So we know with video games, they have psychologists involved to make children want to play more video games. We've got graphic designers, voiceovers. You may even have lawyers protecting the rights of the video game. So take their interest and then generate ideas rather than shutting things down. Or let's say they've mentioned a job and you think this is great. Again, don't just think, right, that's it. We're going to do everything in our power to get them to be a lawyer and engineer. But generate ideas again, asking what and how questions are always good. What do you know about engineering? Or what do you know about this social media influencer? How do you think they've become so successful? Do you think there's anyone else helping them? So you're having a discussion to generate ideas. That's really, really important.
I love this. I can tell you, I personally have screwed this up. Well, sort of. So my oldest loves video games. Mm-hmm. Okay. Does that mean you want to create the video game? You want to develop the storyline? Yeah. You want to do the music? That's cool. But then my middle, I like to build. And I was like, great. You're going to be an engineer or an architect. You want to build robots? Great. Be a roboticist or whatever. But that's me telling them.
But right? I mean, that's fine. You're giving them ideas to link maybe just building with different careers. But again, explore, let them try things out, talk to people. And the other thing, which is really good to do when you're having this kind of conversation, is to link what they're doing to skills. So skills are transferable. We might call them employability skills or soft skills. And those are the kind of skills, doesn't matter what they end up doing, they're really important. So let's say video game, what are the skills you're using? Well, it could be problem solving, resilience, because I know you have to like keep going to go to that next level. Mm-hmm. Things like Fortnite might involve teamwork.
These are the conversations that you should be having when your kid is 13, 14, 15.
I mean, I think that's a good age. Any age is fine. But when they're younger, it's a lot more about, they're a bit more, we call it the fantasy stage. So when you have a young child, you might
like
ask
an 8-year-old.
They want to be like, I'm going to be a professional singer or professional footballer. Let them run with it. Talk. As they get older, they might still want to be a professional footballer, but they'll realize what they need to do to get there. And so the realism sets in. So any age is fine to talk about things, but nothing has to be too serious. You're not making decisions.
How can you, as a parent, specifically leave the door open for future change, like you talked about?
It is a hard one because the world is changing so much. But I think, again, it's about being open-minded. For example, when I see students, the older students, maybe between 16 and 18, and they have to start deciding, what am I going to do after school? And they really struggle because they're like, I can't imagine doing this one thing for 40 years. You don't have to decide what you're going to do for 40 years. And I can use my own life as an example. I started off as a lawyer, and then I did this random website, and now I'm a careers advisor. And I tell them, I went back to university when I was 40, and they're like, you can do that? I can't believe that. A lot of students didn't realize you can go back to uni or you can change careers. Sharing your own story, your own career journeys, or other people's career journeys, going back to the professional sports people, their sport career is quite short. They become TV presenters, or they might write articles, or they might become a coach. So again, it's just showing these changes in people's lives and different journeys.
Let's say that you have a 13, 14, 15-year-old that wants to take the GCSEs in some obscure subject, like media. Do they have a specific class that they get them ready for it?
At St. George's, you have a list of the subjects that you can take at GCSE. So there is media studies. So there's a, I mean, there's a long list of subjects. So you have the compulsory ones, and then there's a huge amount of choice. So the student can pick it as a subject.
And then they're going to have a class to support them in taking
this test. Yes, so then it's part of the timetable. So for 2 years, it's like a 2-year program everyone does. And then at the end of the 2 years, you have an exam, or some are more coursework based.
Can you break it down top level between the A-levels, EB, IB? Like, what kind of student should go for each of those?
The EB at the European schools, that you do a big choice of subjects, but some of them are in a second language. So if you are monolingual, you will not do very well in the EB because you might be doing, you have to pick your second. So you have your first language, which should be your mother tongue, and then you pick a second language. And some of your subjects and your exams are in that second language. So that is for students who are
legitimately fluent in their second language.
Some are not maybe bilingual, but it's tough. The IB is the international system. The last 2 years you do the IB. So with the IB, you do 6 subjects and you have to choose 3 at a higher level and 3 at a standard level. And you have to do maths, English, and a foreign language at either higher level or standard level. So the important thing with the IB, which I think a lot of parents don't realize, is they think the IB is great because you can keep your options open, but you still have to think a little bit further ahead because the 3 subjects you choose at higher level are what will determine what you can do at university. So even though you're doing more subjects than the A levels, you still have to think, what might I want to study? So for example, if you want to do engineering, you would need maths and physics at the higher level. If you do them at the standard level, it might limit your options. And this is why students who do the IB should get a lot of support choosing their higher level subjects. So the IB is an amazing program. It's tough. You have to do a lot of extra things. It really prepares you for university, but you still have to think, what am I going to do at higher level? Because that will determine what I can do at university. So you might think, I want to study economics at university. Maybe typically maths at the higher level is recommended. And then with A levels, you do 3 or 4 subjects. So you're really narrowing it down. And that does suit some students who really know what they want to do. They just want to drop some sciences or maths or a language and just focus on the subjects they love. So you can really thrive and excel doing those subjects. It sounds easy, 3 or 4 subjects, but really, you really go deep into those subjects. So at St. George's, when students are picking their A-levels, that's the first time we really think, what do you want to do after school? Because like with the higher subjects at IB, the A-levels will determine what they can study at university.
Back in my day, you just got a regular high school diploma.
Well, that's the American system. So American system, you do, and the Luxembourgish system, you do all the subjects. So you don't need to
specify.
Start thinking so young. But with the IB and the A-levels in particular, so when they're 16, you don't have to know, but you have to know, if I don't do biology and chemistry, then that means I can't do medicine, for example. So you don't have to 100% know what you want to do after school, but it's the first time you have to really think that far ahead.
By the end of high school, you realize if you're like a math and science person or you're like a humanities kind of person.
Yes. You asked me what kind of system's better for some students. So some students are genuine all-rounders. They can't decide between the sciences, maths, and the languages. Then maybe somewhere like the EB or the IB is good because you can do more subjects. But a lot of students, they are ready to just focus on what they love and want to do. But it is tough for some students to choose. You were asking about universities. Students at St. George's and the other schools in Luxembourg, they go all over the world, and each country and university has different admission requirements. So again, when you are picking your IB subjects or your A-level subjects, you're not just thinking, what do I want to study, but also, where do I want to study?
Those are really good tips. So do you advise to figure out where you want to go to university and then find a program in that country that suits what you are interested in? Or is it better to find the best program that you're interested in and then move wherever that is?
That's really individual on the student, what their strengths and skills are. And that's why at St. George's, all the students have one-to-ones with me when they're making major decisions. So when they're choosing their A-levels, I see every student, they get an hour with me where we sit down and I do a whole sort of career coaching session with them. And then again, in sixth form, they have to come and see me, even if they don't want to, for an hour. So every student is getting bespoke advice. So it does really vary. So yes, we do have some students, maybe they're not particularly strong. So then you need to think about these universities in these countries, or some students, they have loads of options. If you are in the position where your child is about to choose A-levels or the IB subjects, those are the kind of things to think about. Which countries might they want to study in? What might they want to study? And look at the admission requirements.
So we're really looking at middle school age 12, 13, 14 is when you need to start thinking about what I need to study to get into the school in Amsterdam?
Whatever. No, a bit older, I'd say. You're looking more when you're choosing your sort of final 2 years of school.
Okay. So that's when the rubber hits the road, the final 2 years of school.
That's when it gets a bit more serious and the decisions have consequences. And that's why it's really important when your child is younger to let them make decisions themselves. Because then when they're younger, the decisions, if they make a mistake, is not catastrophic. When nothing is catastrophic, I mean, we can always go back and have to do another subject. It might take longer, but as you get older, the decisions have bigger consequences.
What happens if you have a child that is not good at one of the core subjects? I think you have core subjects at A-levels and you have core subjects at IB and EB, right?
So A-level, you don't have core subjects. You're free to choose what you like.
Okay.
With the IB, you have to do a language, English and maths, but mm-hmm. you can do it at standard level.
How hard is that? Solidly
hard. Maths is hard.
What if you just are terrible at languages? Then the IB and definitely the EB is not for you.
The EB, you have to, I think the
languages. So if you're bad at languages, you can't take the EB, the IB, or local school, assuming the language is not
I think you
French.
Can do the IB because they're used to, there's a lot of support and things with the IB with languages. I think they're in Luxembourg, the schools are very used to students coming at different, from different countries, at different positions, different language abilities. So that support is always provided.
Okay.
I think ISL will provide that support. They are so used to international students coming from all over, coming into the last 2 years of school. So I wouldn't worry about that. I think the support is here. And the A-levels, you don't have to do a language if you're not good at it. The local school, it is in French and German. So you would have to be good at languages. And the EB, also you'd have to be good at languages.
Is there a lot of jumping around in Luxembourg? Oh my God, I'm in the last 2 years. I got to figure out which school is
I think there is some movement in the last 2 years. But I think there's quite a lot of movement everywhere in Luxembourg, because I think you ask anyone an opinion on a school and it's going to vary so wildly. The schools, they really depends on your child, how they learn, what they enjoy, where they come from. It depends on what you're used to. The British system or the IB or the EB is very unfamiliar to a lot of people. So I think it really depends on what you expect as a parent from a school, what you're used to, and how your child is. So my children started off in the local school, and then they went to the European school, and now they've been at St. George's for a very long time.
Why did you move them each time?
They went to our local village school, which actually we had a very good experience with, but my son just, even though he started in precoce, he just wouldn't speak, and he's actually very sociable and chatty. So when they're young, it's like, is it the languages or is he just an introvert? And so we gave it a good go for 3 years. And then in the end, no, it's not working. So we moved him to the European school in the English section. He did 2 years there. Wasn't quite what we wanted out of a school. And so in the end, we moved both our kids to St. George's. We've been super happy there. But again, my husband and I both educated in the British system. So it's what we're familiar with as well. And I think that also helped. I'm terrible at languages. So I did also struggle myself with the local school, we live in a village. So it wasn't one of these, like the city schools where there might be a more international makeup of the school. This was very Luxembourg, super friendly, lovely teachers. They tried so hard, but I also struggled. I'm hopeless at languages. And I also felt comfortable in the British environment. So that is kind of a combination of things.
We toured St. George's and I was just, this is just so British. I'm not going to become British, although my grandmother was British, but especially with Brexit, I don't think my kids will go to school in the UK. I mean, if they want to, cool, but like that's not something that's a dream of mine.
St. George's is the British curriculum, but it's not majority British kids. I think it's probably 90% non-British, mostly a lot of different European nationalities. I think in my son's year, I think there's two in each year who are
actually British
like we are. And that's great. And they get that whole multicultural, multilingual environment. I mean, in the playground, you do hear all the other languages. I think they're meant to focus on English and loads of different nationalities. My kids have friends from South America, all over Europe, Asia. So it's a very multicultural school, but the teaching style and the curriculum is British.
One, do you ever talk to kids about the cost of universities? Two, what happens if I have a friend whose daughter I think is applying and she's just all over the map. Is that a case of she needs a career counselor to help narrow it down? Or is that good to just throw out a wide net and see what happens? I know that she wants to pursue medicine, but I mean, she's looking Europe, UK, US, all over. And she's applying to a bunch of schools. And then the last question, if you're a parent and you want to like manipulate the situation so that your kid goes to a school. So for example, for me, if my kid goes to school in Europe, that's a fraction of the cost than the school in America. How can you grease those wheels?
So first question, the cost. Absolutely. It's a massive factor. Parents are usually footing the bill. So for the UK, if you are European or international, now it is very expensive.
How much are we talking?
For normal non-science degree, it's about £30,000 a year.
So it's like 55, 60 grand.
And Europe is a lot cheaper. Obviously, America is super expensive as well. So what we find with the British students usually do still go to the UK because you have that real sort of typical university experience. Accommodations provided in the first year. The universities in the UK, a bit like the American ones, you have societies and sports. But Europeans, now it's expensive. So what we find is that often the European students, they will go to the UK if they're getting into the best universities. So if they're getting into Oxford, Cambridge, Imperial, LSE, Durham, those kind of universities, then they're like, yes, we're going to pay.
But is UCL a really good school?
Yes, that's a good one. I mean, there's lots in the UK. There are lots of universities in the UK and still a lot of the best in the world are there. If the students can get into those ones, then their parents are willing to pay. Some don't want to go to the UK. I mean, we've all seen what's happening in the news and with Brexit. It's changing. Like America, we've also seen students, they don't want to go.
Right? I heard a story of a kid who straight up just was denied. You got accepted to Harvard, but you're not going.
So the political situation does change. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the UK. I'm keeping a close eye on things as well. And then European universities, a lot cheaper, but you still have sometimes accommodation issues. So like in the Netherlands is extremely popular for English speaking degrees, but accommodation is an issue. In like the UK, first years are provided university accommodation. In
you have the Netherlands, a dorm or something.
You have a dorm you're sharing with other first years. So you're all in it together. It's kind of, I think if you're sending your child off at 18 to a new country, you know they're going to be in a block of flats with a bunch of other first years. In the Netherlands, they have to find their own accommodation.
Wow. So nobody's living on campus in the Netherlands?
No. There may be a few universities that have international accommodation, but it's not the norm. When the students get to the age, sort of 16, 17, 18, when they're making those decisions, you have these conversations with them. I think if America or the UK is too expensive, you just have to say that this is not an option for us. Let's see what else is available. There are amazing universities all over Europe and top universities all over the world.
What are the top universities in Europe?
For English speakers, I mean, it depends what you want to study. For example, you mentioned your friend interested in medicine. There are lots of universities in Europe where you can study medicine in English. Italy, for example, has lots of medical degrees that you can do in English. You're looking at TU Delft. That's in the Netherlands, like the top engineering school, or ETH in Zurich in Switzerland.
And how competitive are these?
I mean, the top universities are always going to be competitive. And there's a whole thing we do with applications. So again, like I mentioned, each country is very different. So the UK is very grade focused and very into the academics. Countries like Spain and Italy, they're less focused on your grades. You often need a high school diploma, leaving diploma, but they have their own admission test. Or you might have to do SATs. The Netherlands, again, it really varies on the university. Sometimes the grades might be a bit lower, but again, they have, in the Netherlands, it's more of a level playing field. So they allow more students in the first year, but it's really tough to pass the first year. So then you go in and your first year, you've got to do really well and pass. And a lot of students get kicked out after the first year. The UK makes it tough to get in. But once you're in, the first year, you just have to pass and it's kind of letting you have your fun. And then it gets a bit more serious. So the UK, everything's quite young. You're making these decisions, your exams count quite young. But once you're into university, then you're not going to get kicked out unless you really fail or do something stupid. Each country and each university is quite different. So it's quite hard to answer that question on the whole. It's very difficult for students who really only speak English, who want to stay in Luxembourg, things like apprenticeships or those kind of non-English speaking university routes. That's quite a challenge. And that's where it is useful to have languages. There's more opportunities open to you.
You mentioned that you are not accepting private clients. Are there any resources for people in Luxembourg if they don't go to St. George's?
ChatGPT. I know we all hate AI. This is actually quite useful to ask questions. But again, it's not 100% reliable. So it can be a good place to start and then always do your own research. And if you're looking at universities, always go to the source. Go to university website. What you're looking for is admission requirements. That's really key.
And how do you find out about the cultural stuff? Like, you might get kicked out after a year and there's no housing.
Talk to people who have gone there, possibly. So your school might have an alumni network where you can talk to people who've gone there before. The University of Luxembourg does run a university fair. ISL also runs university fairs that are open to all students and non-ISL students as well. So I encourage my St. George's students to go there. So that's really great that they open it to the public. And they're usually focused on the US, and a few UK universities go. And they have a couple a year. There's one early October that's being advertised by the US Embassy at ISL. Start going to things like that. Look at university open days. Those are really great to talk and ask those questions. They often have online webinars. I know the Netherlands puts on webinars on how Dutch universities work, how to apply. And that's why these research skills are really, really important. I can't stress that enough. You need to help your child learn how to research these things themselves.
Is there anything else that you really feel strongly that you need to say?
No, I'm aware that there's a lot I've said, and it does sound quite confusing, especially all the different school systems. All the schools and all the systems, I really do genuinely think, are brilliant, and different ones suit different students. So don't get paralyzed in what is going to be the right decision. I think they're all good and they're all accepted all over the world. And Luxembourg is a successful country and students from Luxembourg do very well. So I think parents can also relax and know that whatever school system they're in, they're all accepted, recognized worldwide.
Okay,
enjoy the journey.
That doesn't sound so joyful. Sounds kind of stressful, but that's okay. Okay, Annika, thank you so much. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you like the show, I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to leave a comment or share with another mom friend. And if there's a topic you'd like to see covered or you want to be on the show yourself, please email me at momlife@rtl.lu. Thanks so much and have a great day.